Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 30.
This week on the podcast, reality is not a factor in Republican polling, but good news, Romney's running away with the race among voters without cell phones.
Both Romney and Obama declare themselves awful debaters, but Chris Christie believes otherwise.
Yep, still no details on the Romney tax plan.
We have our first ever non-Olympic sports story. Hint, it involves pensions.
And the Massachusetts Senate campaign is dealing with the big issues, like how to properly identify and taunt a Native American.
Tommy Thompson's still very confused about what he's supposed to think about Obamacare, but tries not to miss a credit-taking opportunity when it arises.
And Lindsay Lohan enters the political fray in a way only she could. All this and so much more on Brain Trust Live.
Well, it's the week of the first debate.
Yes, so exciting.
This
You're
is it.
2 days away.
This is when
You'll
it
be
happens.
Listening to this 1 day away from the debate.
Yeah, or after it, probably. You'll be like, why don't these people know anything?
Or you'll never hear it.
Or you'll never listen to this. But anyway, because it is the week before the debate, polls have taken on special importance this week.
They have, because it's sort of
because it's all
the
anyone
whole
can
story
talk
about what everyone needs to do at the debate is sort of dictated by these polls, which we're learning that sort of
may or may not mean anything.
Right. If you're a Republican, they mean
if
nothing.
You're a Republican, well, we already know you don't believe in science
or math.
So
right, exactly.
It's not much of a stretch to presume that you also don't really believe in the science of polling
right.
or statistics.
Yeah, there's a new sort of thing that the Republicans
trend.
Are doing. It's a trend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a fad.
It's a fad.
You will. Yes. And we've been talking a lot about sort of how Romney is getting crushed in pretty much every single poll there is
yeah.
out there. And what the Republicans have decided to do as of this last week, really, is to just declare that they are all, every single one of them,
is
factually
it?
Inaccurate.
To deny that polls are to deny
right.
that polls work.
Every poll in every swing state and every national poll is now currently incorrect.
Yes. And there are certain levels that they're doing this on that are predictable.
Yes.
Like, it's not a shock that Rush Limbaugh doesn't really have much of an incentive
right.
to deliver correct polling information.
Correct.
Because he's just sort of trying to excite the base.
Yes. Rush Limbaugh basically declared this week that some of the new polls that were out were basically only out there. They were made up to suppress Republicans from
yes.
feeling like they wanted to get everybody to think that the election was over and that Republicans didn't need to vote
Should
because
just
Romney's
stay
already
home.
Lost. So,
There's
which
a
doesn't make any sense because if you saw that your candidate was
suppress
losing,
the
then you
Republican
would try and
vote,
get out the
you
vote. You
would
and
think
you would
that.
Get, so, but
stop
he's a,
it.
He's a
but
moron.
His logic is not impeccable.
No.
Dick Morris, also out there on Fox News, declaring
mm-hmm.
that
he said this week that Romney was going to win
by four or
by
five
four
points.
Four or five points if the election were held today.
Which is a day in which Romney is losing,
losing
by at least
by exactly that amount.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or more. Right.
And yeah, Dick Morris went so far as to specifically predict wins in Florida, Ohio, Virginia, Nevada, and Pennsylvania. So he's feeling real optimistic.
Right. All states that he's losing in.
Yeah.
Some of them badly.
By drastic
like
numbers.
Ohio and Pennsylvania are basically out of reach.
Yeah.
Regardless right now. I mean, he would lose to an unnamed Democrat in those
right.
states right now, basically.
And there's sort of a lot of talk about a specific polling website called unskewedpolls.com, which offers nothing but skewed polls,
right.
in which they include more Republicans in their sample than Democrats for unknown reasons.
Yeah, basically what they do is they take all of the polling that a lot of the national groups have done, and then they just
and
sort
then
of
reweight
like,
it.
They reweight it and basically make up new numbers based on no math or science.
Yeah.
And then
but
just
that
go
hasn't
with
stopped
those.
Rick Perry from.
No, he's really. He loves the unskewedpolls.com.
Yeah.
Rick Perry's real into it.
It's him and Rush Limbaugh out there leading the fight against
yeah.
math. But there's also sort of like, I mean, one of the things that some of the articles that we were reading about this issue point out is that if the Romney campaign really wants to go as far as to question the integrity of polls, or if the Republican Party really wants
right.
to go that far, then it sort of is it's sort of implied that the Romney campaign is complicit in the whole thing. Because their own pollster relies on polling data from people that have them behind.
Right, exactly.
It's
well,
like they're out there trying to shoot themselves in the foot, which,
right.
as we noted before, is something they are doing.
Yeah. Well, and Romney was winning for a while, too, and they weren't throwing
right.
those polls out the window.
Exactly.
Those polls are fine. And then the exact same polls.
These new polls.
A month
these
later.
These new polls are the worst.
They have real issues.
Science really
ones.
Took a turn in
yeah,
the last few
months.
Weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh.
It's been really tragic out there
yeah.
for the Romneys. The other thing that has been sort of hilarious is that Rasmussen does not use cell phones to reach people, which means that there's a lot of people our age that just never get there's included a lot of, in their
there's
polling
a lot of
sample.
People our age, and there's a lot of people like under 70, basically, yeah. at this point. Right. I mean, like, my yeah. parents don't have a landline, and they're in their early 60s.
Exactly.
So, like,
I mean, but so Rasmussen has the race as very close.
Time. Or almost
a close.
Right?
A close race.
Sure. I like that.
They're the only poll that has it that close, and that's right. potentially because they're not contacting most people. Because I don't think yeah. I know anyone besides my parents that have a landline.
I don't know anybody with a landline.
It's like,
no.
I mean, I wouldn't know also because a lot of people took their landline numbers and put them on cell phones, so I'm calling numbers that I think are landlines that are not.
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
You would never know.
No.
But the Romneys are sort of using that as an indication that things are not quite as far gone as people seem to be claiming.
Right.
Because people without cell phones are voting for Romney. Almost.
Of course. That's his
they're
base.
They're not quite leading in that category, but yeah. they're just not as far behind yeah. with landline owners.
Romney is really bringing it home with non-cell phone users.
With landline uh-huh. users.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Those people who probably still don't have the internet.
No.
Or if they do, they have dial-up. a thing that I couldn't even have if I wanted to because I don't have a landline.
Exactly.
But anyway, in light of that, we have some sort of things to look for in the coming debate.
Yes.
The debate, this is going to be the first debate of the season.
Yes, of three,
Of three.
Yeah.
Candy Crowley is hosting one of them, but not this one.
No.
This is a Jim awful. Lehrer debate.
Yes.
He's sort of a standby. He's going to do general debate like
this. I think this is all supposedly domestic policy.
Right, this is the domestic
sure. Correct.
Policy yes. debate, or... I mean, I think that they're sort of planning their talking points on defense issues, possibly because there was that recent thing that we're going to get into where everyone got angry at Obama for not yes. speaking to the UN people one-on-one, and also because of the Libya situation.
Right.
So I don't know that it will be quite as domestically focused as it could be.
Yeah.
But as we know, appearance really matters in the debate world. We learned that in the first televised debate ever, the Nixon-JFK
yes.
debacle,
right.
if you will, where Nixon, who seemed like a reasonable guy until everyone saw him looking creepy on television,
right. basically,
was running away with everything. Yeah.
Kennedy became president because he wore stage makeup.
Yeah.
Basically.
And had a youthful exuberance on camera.
Yeah, he has that. He has his presidency all to thank on
appearance.
Makeup.
Mm-hmm. And good
yeah.
hair.
Right. Well, for sure.
Which Nixon, sadly,
yeah.
was not.
But there's been some recent things in debates too that have sort of, you know, been
yeah.
big stories. A lot of times the news coming out of the debate, and this is sort of ridiculous probably because it's not issue related, but you know, I mean,
it's body language news.
It's body language news.
It's Gore sort of like sighing or whatever.
I mean,
he was up to.
Everybody blamed Ralph Nader on Gore losing that race,
but
it was his sighing in that
yeah,
last debate.
It was him being a wooden speaker and seeming bored mysteriously
right.
at the same time.
Yep.
That got him sort of behind, you know, that didn't give hand him the presidency.
No.
That was an obvious win otherwise.
Yeah.
And by the same token, Bush sort of looked sort of disinterested in John Kerry at his debate and sort of seemed like a wandering teenager.
Well, John Kerry's the most boring person alive.
Well, it's not hard to be bored by John
outside
Kerry.
Of
that's true.
Maybe Mitt Romney. So Obama's going to have to watch himself.
I mean,
he may become very disinterested in this debate very quickly.
He's practicing with the best.
Sure,
he's practicing
with John
Kerry.
Yeah, exactly.
So
right.
he's going to be fully prepared in every way.
He'll know how to keep himself awake.
How to keep himself awake
when
during
seem
the
to
debate.
Be going a little dry.
But also, sort of general wisdom has it that the beginning of the debate is the most important part because that's what sort of generates the news cycle
yes.
going.
Right. Exactly.
And then everyone starts tweeting about everything based on what the news reports from the first
yep.
half hour or so. So if you're going to look bored, you have to do it later.
Yeah.
Which Mitt Romney may have a hard time looking. He looks permanently bored to me because he sort of looks like he's sort of having to deal with the peons
yes.
every time he talks to normal people.
Yeah, correct.
So
well,
that's what he's
actually
doing.
Thinking.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I feel like for him, he's going to have to figure out a way to not look condescending, despite the fact that he's sort of genetically programmed to look condescending.
Yeah,
and they always try to peg Obama with that, and Obama
yeah.
really doesn't look condescending.
Everybody says he's aloof.
Exactly.
That's the word that
yeah.
always gets
he seems sort
around.
Of like aloof. He seems like, he's well-educated.
Right.
But he doesn't seem like he's being condescending to everyone in the way that someone like Romney, who, despite having the same education, comes off as someone who didn't really deserve
the
privilege.
Being aloof is different than looking like you just don't give a fuck.
Exactly. And not really having to.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So I think there's... And I think it's sort of common knowledge that there's really more for Romney to lose than Obama to gain.
Yes.
Obama's in the lead. He just has to look like he's not a complete idiot.
Right.
To kind of keep things moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
But Romney really has some ground to make up, and he's going to have a hard time because he's not comfortable offering specifics on any of the things that people are going to hammer him on.
Right.
You know,
they're going to talk domestic policy, then they're going to, that's what he's going to,
that's all we're going to hear about.
He's going to spend all night having to dodge his tax
plan
and
dodge what he's non-specific things about closing tax loopholes and not raising taxes on middle class Americans that are not mathematically possible.
Right, we're gonna get to that in a little bit.
Yes, we are.
Yeah,
but I mean that's sort of like where he's gonna start losing ground. And the other question is really what he's gonna do about Bush.
Yeah,
because it's not gonna set such a strong, you know, argument for him if he has to run away from the last Republican rule, but he really does.
He does.
Because Bush is tremendously unpopular still.
But he also has the same policies as him, so it's a real catch-22.
It's tough.
It's a tough,
it's gonna be tough
act
to differentiate himself and still run away with, you know, the logic.
Yes, exactly.
But
of course all of the candidates, as if there's more than two.
Just the whole field of two.
Both of them are out sort of like doing the expectations game right now. Because
talking
what you're supposed
to
do before a debate is basically like make it seem as
like
though,
you're not a great
as
debater.
Long as you can walk upright, then you've like basically like had success at the debate.
Exactly.
So they're both doing that.
Yeah,
right now.
They're both walking around being like, I'm not such a great debater. Obama says,
Obama,
I'm just okay.
Yeah, Obama literally today was like talking about how great of a debater Romney was and how just sort of like mediocre he was about it, which is just sort of
as
like,
if
what?
Romney has ever debated anyone in this context on this type of stage.
No.
Obama's like, been on the national stage since, like, the moment he was born, basically, as a politician, metaphorically born.
Sure. The only thing that we've seen out of Romney in debates is, like, getting shredded by Ted Kennedy.
Right.
And saying ridiculous things in the Republican primary debate because he had to, basically.
Sharing a stage. Like, he was not even a contender in the news cycle that followed many of those primary debates.
No,
because he was just, like, not on the map. He was, like, really boring. He wasn't saying anything crazy enough to warrant coverage.
There were, like, nine other, like, insane...
Yeah, it was, like debating in a loony bin. Right. Like,
yeah, it was.
It was there was nothing for him to stand out on.
Right.
Other than... And he wasn't even the only Mormon on the ticket. Like, he had really nothing going for him. So, needless to say, this is going to be a new kind of attention for him. And certainly, probably not welcome.
Right. But everybody seems to think that he is probably going to go on the attack just because he sort of has to make a big statement. And
if he has to play defense, he's lost everything.
And apparently his staff has been writing zingers and one-liners for him that he has been like practicing
memorizing.
Like for months and like memorizing.
Yeah.
So we're going to be hearing a lot of
memorized stiff
right.
zingers from Mitt Romney.
But I can't remember who it was, but somebody who was on Meet the Press this week was basically saying that they didn't think that was necessarily a great idea because where he has sort of screwed up in debates past is sort of on the follow-up. Like when he sort of has to defend something after he said it, he realizes that there is no defense and then says something ridiculous. Like that's where you get an answer about where he wants everyone to self-deport, or that's where he accidentally bets Rick Perry $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever it was. Like it's on the sort of like needling that things like that seem to happen with him. His skin can easily be gotten.
He also is sort of like, his first incentive is not, I mean, his first inclination is not to tell a sensitive joke. Like, he's sort of like famously insensitive.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, you know, the idea of like the betting $5,000 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of thing where like, you maybe wouldn't even start saying that in your head if you were the kind of person who was not aggressively competitive in a sort of, like, angry way.
Yeah. No, you're right.
If you were not the kind of person who was, like, aggressively cutting gay classmates' hair in high school and dressing up as a policeman to scare your friends.
Yeah, reasonable people aren't doing those things.
No, I'm Sir, I'm not ever betting Brent any dollars that anything is ever happening because I don't have any dollars, A. And generally, and that's like a really douchey thing to do.
It totally is. Yeah, exactly.
But because of that, I think Brent was at least saying to me, I didn't read this anywhere. I'm just going to credit you as if you're a news source.
Sure.
That the Obama camp is sort of prepping Obama with stuff that a little more on the offensive than he would normally need to be in a debate where he just needs to maintain composure.
Right.
Because they need to make sure they needle Romney into one of his outbursts.
Right. They want to catch him off guard. And to do so, they feel like they have to maybe go a little bit more sort of aggressively than they would in a debate where he just really sort of like needs to
stay alive.
Stay alive. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we'll see how it goes. It should be
the battle of the Harvard minds.
Yes.
It's going to be a real...
Yeah.
Boring.
But one more note about the sort of expectations.
Right. One person who hasn't been helping anyone deal with anything in the press
right.
has been Chris Christie.
Right. He hasn't been helping basically since he sort of like kicked off the RNC with that speech that was panned by basically
everyone.
Human.
Yeah.
He's just not really been doing
his
job.
He's never been
very well.
Helping, really.
No, of course not.
He's just like.
Well, he's not interested in helping either.
He's interested in helping himself. So he's been talking about how great Mitt Romney is going to be, which is sort of like not what you do.
He was doing this on Meet the Press at the same time that Paul Ryan was being like, well, no one event is going to change the course of this campaign. At the same time Paul Ryan was saying that, Chris Christie was being like, this debate is going to change the entire course of the campaign. Yeah. And come Thursday morning, this campaign is going to be completely flipped on its head and just sort of like...
Yeah, the entire narrative of this race is going to change.
You're off message, Chris Christie.
Permanently, but specifically. Right. So Chris Christie, raising expectations.
Doing it all wrong.
Doing everything wrong.
Yeah. One thing that Romney is obviously going to have to answer in this domestic policy debate is the sort of ongoing issue of his tax plan.
Like, why can't this just, like... Why can't he just, like, have an answer by now?
Exactly.
It's months
during every interview. It's not ever going to stop.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
And this is, like, the kind of question that, what's the incentive to stop asking you until November? Why not just keep asking?
Yeah.
Because he gives the same predictable non-answer every time. He steps into it every single time.
So, Scott Pelley last week on, 60 Minutes was interviewing Mitt Romney and asked him about his tax plan and all of the loopholes and basically the fuzziness to the math that is involved with it.
The fuzzy math.
And this is what we got.
Well, I can tell them specifically what my policy looks like. I will not raise taxes on middle-income folks. I will not lower the share of taxes paid by high-income individuals. And I will make sure that we bring down rates, we limit deductions and exemptions, so we keep the progressivity in the code, and we encourage growth in jobs.
And the devil's in the details, though. I mean, what are we talking about? The mortgage deduction? The charitable deduction?
The devil's in the details. The angel is in the policy.
You know that old saying, the devil's in the details, the angel's in something else?
No.
Don't know it.
I'm unfamiliar.
So, yet another non-answer. Meanwhile...
It was the oddest answer, anyway.
Does he sound
a little bit
like Michael Jackson in this
voice
clip?
His voice is weird.
Sounds weird.
Yeah.
He sounds like he's, like, sort of got this slightly effeminate whisper going.
Yeah. Boy.
There's a lot that's weird about that
interview. There's a lot that's weird about that interview, yeah. Certainly, the angels and the policy doesn't make a damn lick of sense. The other thing that doesn't make a damn lick of sense in that is any of what he... said, basically.
Yeah, because what he said was the same answer he's been given this whole time.
Right, which is A, has no details, and B, is mathematically impossible.
Yeah. No, they like to say that by detail, you know, they like to, when they're asked for details, they like to say things like, we'll close tax loopholes, as if that's a detail that we need offered to us. Like, obviously, we know that they're planning to close tax loopholes. We've been told before.
Right.
If at this point we're still asking for details, we're not asking for that level of vagueness.
Well, and I think the other reason that they don't want to say, I think to a certain degree they do know which ones they want to close. I don't think they're so stupid that they don't have a bit of a plan.
No, I think that they know it doesn't add up.
Well, I think they know it doesn't add up, and I think that they also know, you know, Scott Pelley in that clip threw out a few of the things. He was like, well, is it going to be, you know, the home loan interest write-off or whatever deduction, or is it going to be the charitable donation deduction?
And they know there that are a lot all of things, that sounds...
Yeah, there are a lot of things that middle-income people use. I mean, every year I do my taxes, I write off something ridiculous, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like a charitable donation or something.
You can't go out pitching to places, you know, in Kansas that they're going to take away, like, your deductions that you... you know, for money that you gave to your church.
It's those are the things they don't want to talk about. I know that ultimately those are deductions that are most beneficial to rich people because they do these like large philanthropic things where they know they're going to get a tax write-off for it, and that tax write-off makes a difference for them. Yeah. Which it doesn't really end up making a difference when you donate $10 to the Red Cross for middle-income Americans.
Right.
However, the way that it sounds when you pitch that idea to middle-income Americans is very different.
Yeah.
Because they like to think that they're the kind of people
correct.
Who benefit from those tax write-offs.
Yeah, exactly.
So, though the reality, I mean, it's just going to be impossible to pitch,
you can't pitch
these
it.
Write-offs. They all sound like they impact middle-income Americans.
Yeah.
They all sound like, aspirationally, they're the kinds of things people want to have impact them.
Right.
It's the same way everyone thinks they're middle class in this country, even though no one is anymore.
Right. And thinks that they can... be rich if they just
work hard enough.
Yeah,
but I mean, there's a reason that Democrats always pitch all of their ideas to as benefiting the middle class, even though so few people even fall into that category anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And it's because everyone thinks they're middle class, or that's what they claim. I'm always getting into arguments with Democrats about this.
Sure.
But
so Paul Ryan basically was asked to explain the same thing by Chris Wallace on Fox News, and here's what he had to say.
Let me just
you haven't given me the math.
No, but you, well, I don't have the time. It would take me too long to go through all of the math, but let me say it this way.
After which he went on to say exactly what Mitt Romney was saying with his specifics in the last clip, which was nothing.
But not enough time.
Not enough time.
Not enough time in the day.
Nope. He also later said that if he tried to explain the details, everyone would start changing the channel.
Yes,
So that was on, Laura Ingraham? He's been just really... talking up a storm about how boring the tax details are for their, I mean, the details are for their tax plan.
Yeah. Oh boy, not enough time, they're boring. Anyway.
Some details that we are getting.
Right.
Came to us during a campaign event in Westerville, Ohio, where Romney told small business owners this.
Small businesses typically pay tax at the individual tax rate. And so our individual income taxes are ones I want to reform, make them simpler. I want to bring the rates down. By the way, don't be expecting a huge cut in taxes because I'm also going to lower deductions and exemptions.
So he's going to champion small businesses, but he's not going to give them a tax cut.
Right.
He's going
to... We know one group that is not going to be benefiting from
a huge
his
tax cut
scheme.
That would be
small business owners.
He's going to increase exemptions that he doesn't name or specify in any way. And I also wonder how much this is just code for I'm going to lower taxes for rich people, because small businesses, if they're paying individual tax rates, are ostensibly paying individual
tax rates
on what would be a wealthy individual's income.
Right.
Right? I mean...
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right.
So, basically...
So I think he may have just given us a little proof as to, like, what the middle class is going to be expecting from his
not
tax
huge
plan,
tax cuts.
Because it's not going to be huge tax cuts.
Yep.
Yeah. Despite... claiming that he's going to cut taxes
champion.
By 20%.
He's going to champion us. Yeah. It's going to be nice having a champion, finally.
By not taking care of us at all, basically.
Ooh,
this is my favorite section of the podcast.
So Brent brought this story to me earlier in the week, and I told him that as long as he could talk knowledgeably about it, I would get behind it because it was about labor. But I want to caution everyone that I have not read a single word about this NFL referee strike. I told Brent that he was going to have to explain it to me on the podcast.
Right. It's weird because I love sports.
Right.
Which is odd, I know. I'm sort of like the gay Christian sports lover. I'm a real enigma. And a catch, people. but it was weird because it hadn't even struck me as anything that we could talk about on the podcast. Because this has been going on for like the entire season. Basically.
I found out about it on Monday.
Well,
yes.
So the reason that this sort of like came to a head last week because... there was a real sham of a call at the end of the Monday Night Football game, which was Seattle and Green Bay.
Tragedy
struck. Like, it was a whole huge debacle. There was a touchdown at the end of the game with, like, no time left. That clearly was not a touchdown, but they called it a touchdown. And then they went to review, and they didn't overturn it, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so it got it was Green Bay ended up losing. So it got literally Scott Walker into the game the next morning, was like, we want the union refs back. And ditto Paul Ryan, like all of these like total anti-union people were like, you know, basically only mad because the Packers lost.
Right.
So we, all of a sudden, it's pro-union Tuesday morning because the Packers lost in Wisconsin. Like, so I was like, well, we should be talking about that on the podcast.
Yeah.
Because it's if a, there's it's one a thing labor dispute.
I can always get behind. It's a union issue.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So anyway, Paul Ryan went on this like ridiculous like analogy where he I'm just going to read you the whole
thing. Just
do it. Okay.
Go for it.
I'm explaining it to you and to everyone.
And to America.
So this is Paul Ryan. He said, did you guys watch that Packers game last night? I mean, huh, give me a break. It's time to get the real refs. And you know what? It reminds me of President Obama and the economy. Wait, what a minute. He goes on. If you can't get it right, it's time to get out. I think these refs work part-time for the Obama administration in the budget office. They see the national debt clock staring them in the face. They see a debt crisis, and they just ignore and pretend it didn't even happen. They're trying to pick the winners and losers, and they don't even do that very well.
Well, you know what's tough is when you have non-union people in there, well, they'll sometimes get the debt clock wrong, won't they?
Yeah. Well, and what was so...
is so weird because it basically, like, implies... And this is not even really... I mean, this is not the case with the Obama administration or anything like that, but it's sort of, like, implying that people who aren't in unions can't be trusted to do their jobs.
Well, it absolutely is, because, like, these non-union refs, like, totally boned it big time. But, like,
well, and weren't they just, like, random, like, high school? Like, they were refs from, like...
I don't know.
I finally, once I found out about it, was hearing all sorts of rumors about where these refs came from.
Sure.
And it was, like, high school teams.
Nobody knows.
Teams no one trusted.
Yeah. But it's like I said to Lila, it's interesting because they even had the backup refs. And it just sort of, it makes you wonder sort of how, you know, we've been covering like the Chicago teachers labor strike.
Right.
What if they had gone with the backup teachers?
Right.
I mean, I think the teachers probably would have been welcomed back a little bit warmer than they were, because in the NFL, it's there or in any sport really, like you're supposed to hate the referees.
Right.
When the referees came back last Thursday, because they resolved this last week. And so they were back on Thursday, and they literally got, like, the biggest ovation on the Thursday night NFL game. It's just sort of like, they'd been on it. Nobody had ever loved anyone as much as they had loved those referees after, like, the other, like, non-union referees screwed it up. So it's just sort of
scab labor really can't be trusted.
No.
Yeah. Finally, a union issue that people of both parties can agree on.
Can really get behind. Yeah, but it's interesting, though, because...
What were they striking about?
Well, they were striking about... pay and also their pensions, because the NFL basically wanted to, they sort of like weren't happy with the raise package that had been proposed, and they also were going to change them over from sort of like a pension based retirement plan into sort of like a 401k sort of like that they were going to be paying into.
Like, why do you want to join a union if you're going to end up with a 401k?
Exactly. So, you know, it's interesting because it's, you know, in relation to sports, but I mean, it really is sort of,
it's issues.
Yeah, exactly. There was a really good article in the Washington Post, basically, that sort of, the headline was what NFL's referee dispute tells us about labor unions.
Right.
And it really sort of was a good sort of model for a lot of the other, you know, union issues that have been going on in the country. So I don't know how much people paid attention to it other than just being pissed off at the like interim refs. But
I feel like it's not a bad, though, I mean, anytime that you have a bunch of rabid sports fans, who I imagine are not also all rabid union fans, walking around being like, where are those damn union workers?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Couldn't hurt.
I mean, anything that could get Scott Walker to come out in favor
of... To put his foot in his mouth.
Yeah,
that's...
So, anyway.
Convenient that it was Green Bay.
If
anything else. And isn't Green Bay... Brent told me this also recently... Oh, yeah. Green Bay is owned by the city.
Yes.
It is a publicly owned team.
It is, indeed.
Which I find, it's the people's team. Mm-hmm. I find that sort of delightful.
Me too.
I don't really know what that means in the context of football, because, and I don't even, like, New York City's not even a football town, really. Like, I don't even know what anything means in the context of football.
Well, right.
Because we don't really follow football.
Well, and both teams are, like, don't they sort of like...
They play in New Jersey.
They play in New Jersey.
It's and a New Jersey situation.
I was going to say, and the Jersey people sort of like to like nudgingly call them like the New Jersey Giants.
Those people are crazy because obviously people wouldn't be as excited and get as much money out of their, you know. I mean, being a New York team has its benefits, but they're not the Yankees. Like,
no.
But I'm heartened that there was another union update for us this week, even though it came from the world of sports.
We've had like a month straight of union
This is
updates.
A serious union month.
It is.
It is the month of Labor Day. It's,
yeah.
And I mean, we brought you almost nothing in the month of the International Labor Day, on May Day. I mean, in May, nothing was going on.
Sure.
But American Labor Day is finally...
Got us in gear.
This probably is why we celebrate Labor Day now, is because this is when things start. It's like
maybe.
Teachers
go
back to school.
Right, yeah.
You know,
could be.
Contracts get renegotiated.
Football starts.
It's an important time for unions.
Yeah. But this was a good week because we're going to get you to a story later that's sort of where politics and pop culture intersected. And
yeah,
it also intersected with sports, and it made me really happy.
Yeah, Brent's really been on a roll this week. but first, some good jobs data. Apparently, everything you've heard is wrong because Obama has had a net positive for job creation since he took office, thanks to the fact that apparently we've been creating more jobs than anyone's been reporting, and no one has talked about it.
I know. I mean, we sort of felt like he was going to get to the net positive by the time the election came around because he was like getting close despite all of those, like, you know, basically like 700,000 jobs that were being lost like when he took over basically in luck.
But the Bureau of Labor Statistics basically like revised their numbers from the past.
Yeah, and they revised them up like big time. Like between March 2011 and March 2012, the economy apparently created 386,000
more jobs
than had been previously reported, which seems odd. That
seems
like
a
news story that maybe we would have heard, but no.
Would have been a headline, but no. There was football.
But
there
anyway,
was football
so,
on strike, so what could
exactly.
we do?
So those revised numbers got him back into the sort of like net positive for the
So we're here, guys.
Office.
We
there
did
you
it.
Have it. And that was a talking point that the Romney campaign was going with for a while, that he'd had a net negative, which was sort of deceiving anyway. We talked about the
it
podcast.
It was deceiving because the first year of his office was the
Everything
Bush
was going
policy.
To shit. Yeah, exactly. So, but now they can't even say that. So that's sort of exciting.
And that's sort of a big issue because that includes his first year.
Right.
So.
Yep.
It's over now, Romney.
Yep.
Can't talk about jobs.
Sorry about it.
Let's talk about something else.
Yep.
Talk about taxes.
You can talk about being mad that Obama
didn't
meet
go
with
visit
some
Netanyahu.
World leaders while he was at the UN because he was busy being on The View. This is a
this
big,
was,
the Republican
yeah,
aid at
this
This
was
last
a
week.
Big, this is one of those stories that comes out of nowhere and you're like, what? And then it stays in the news for a few days and the whole time you're like, huh? And then at the end you're sort of like, oh, it was a fake story. like you spend like 3 days being like, why don't I understand what this is? Why this is such a big deal?
Well,
and then
it's not.
At the end of it, you're like, oh, it wasn't.
Right, exactly.
So Obama came to New York because he was going to be on The View.
Right. Well, and he did speak at the UN,
he
like
spoke
the opening
at the UN,
of the UN.
Right.
He gave his speech, sort of like
he
always
what
he
does
recently, like you do.
But he did not set any bilateral talks. This is not to say that his administration did not, because Hillary Clinton was having bilateral talks with people at this time.
Yeah.
But, Obama himself did not set any bilateral talks during this visit to New York.
Right.
And everyone got all pissed off about it.
Yeah, because and part of the reason that they got pissed off about it, because apparently Netanyahu had
owns America, apparently.
Right. Had wanted to meet with Obama and had been rebuffed.
Yeah. Here's
the
catch,
though. And
was
being sort of dramatic about
it. They weren't in town on the same days.
Right.
So, like, sorry about it. Like, come talk.
Well, and it's also just like Jay Carney said. He was just like, you know, the president chats with him
all the time,
more than he probably even wants to.
Yeah,
if I had to guess.
Like, you know,
the other thing that I heard about this, and I forgot to tell you this, but apparently I was listening to someone, I don't remember, was on the radio, but they were saying that Netanyahu has a re-election bid coming up.
Yes,
and
he does.
And apparently it's going to be close.
Is
and
it?
So
I have not
there
heard
is,
that.
I guess Israel is sort of like split on this whole
well
like,
I mean they would
know.
Be the entire region around them is going to shit
right
and the decision on whether or not to pursue aggressive policies or not is sort of an important one,
but there are some people who are sort of out there thinking that potentially that the Obama sort of rebuffing him is in a way that will potentially think that...
That we don't support him in his re-election bid?
Correct, and that maybe he won't get re-elected because people will sort of, like, want to make sure that we sort of have, you know, the Americans on their side. Oh. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but...
Interesting.
So, yeah, because they do not get along.
No. That's sort of famously... They're
pretty open about it. Well, yeah. They're not open about it, but I mean, like... Everybody who's sort of like about it. People who are close to the
everyone. You know. It's sort of an open secret,
right? Exactly. Yeah.
So and I feel like it's potentially not a surprise because who does Netanyahu get along with? Not anyone that I've ever heard of. So I don't know. Anyway, more news from fake stories made up by Republican media.
Specifically, Matt Drudge.
The Drudge Report. Has been having a field day talking about Obama phones.
Oh, boy.
And there was like a Twitter hashtag.
Oh,
there was
man.
All sorts of nonsense with this claim that Obama was giving phones to low-income people.
Right.
Which the government does pay for phones for low-income people.
Yeah.
That's a program that was started under the Bush administration. So they're not Obama phones. They're, and it's also paid for by a nonprofit. So it's not even paid for by taxpayers.
Right.
I mean, it started under Reagan. Original idea started under Reagan.
Where they were subsidizing people's
right, because they
phone
split
bills,
up,
basically.
They split up AT&T right. or something, or Bell Atlantic, or one of those big phone conglomerates. And so they started subsidizing phone service. Now they have a program that started under Bush where they subsidize cell phone service. But Obama has not really had anything to do with any of it.
Well, Drudge and, of course, Limbaugh basically made it sound like that, you know, the Obama aides were sort of, like, going around and, like, passing out iPhones at, like, all of their campaign events to low-income people.
P.S. Much. I would vote for you if you gave me an iPhone, somebody.
Hello.
We tried to get an iPhone 5 for Brett last weekend.
I'm trying to get one
for... It was a disaster.
Right. Ugh.
We're not the kind of prepared people who knew to order early.
Well, I couldn't because I was at the whim of my family plan.
Oh, right.
With my parents who don't understand what a data plan is, so...
But you apparently could not walk into a store last weekend and just buy an iPhone 5.
Or this weekend. Oh, I've been calling every day at 10 o'clock
of course
in the morning when the store's open. I need to order it, but it's going to take a month, and I just keep telling myself I can get it faster than that, but that's probably not going to be the case. Like, a year from now, I'm going to have my cracked cell phone, Samsung Galaxy
One. The other issue is that Brent's phone is cracked. It's broken.
Disaster.
So we could use Obama phones up in here if anyone was interested.
Oh, God. The Scott Brown, Elizabeth Warren...
Debate.
Yeah, the debate happened tonight, and there was one last week, too, that sort of, like, set off a firestorm. But that campaign...
Oh, yeah, it's gone wild.
...has just devolved into, like,
I was in Massachusetts this week, and it was, like, nonstop news about Warren and Brown. And all of it was crazy.
It's
like,
crazy.
Like, things have just... And it's too bad, because Elizabeth Warren is really one of my favorite candidates in this election cycle, and I really think she's probably one of the most sort of articulate people that's running.
Yeah.
But she's been... There's, like... madness going on right now in their campaign events, and all of it has to do with Native Americans.
Yes.
Not many of whom live in Massachusetts, P.S.
Right.
Like, that's...
They all got chased out of there.
That's one of the first places they got chased out of.
Yep.
But this week, the news was that Brown staffers were doing, like, sort of a tomahawk chop whoop thing at Warren campaign events, and we have some audio of it. It's sort of confusing audio, but...
We'll explain it to you.
We'll explain it to you after it happens. Like, what?
I know. So basically what we were listening to there was we were at an Elizabeth Warren rally. So you heard people cheering, Warren, Warren.
Right.
And then you had Scott Brown's staff. They were all his aides. Doing, like, Indian war cries
doing la, 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 la,
in the background.
Stuff.
Yeah. Like, what?
What?
Yeah. So this is all to
Holy
do.
Moly.
We should maybe backtrack, because we talked about this, like, months ago, because it was an issue a while ago. But basically, she marked that she was a Native American, like, on some, like, college admissions or something like that. I don't even remember what it was.
A college, like, it was a form for a place somewhere she was teaching, and it was some... She claims to have some vague Native American ancestry.
She claims that her mother growing up always told her that she was like part Cherokee and blah, blah, blah. So she had always just taken her mother at her word and whatever else. So last week at the debate, Scott Brown brought it up again and was like, look at her. Obviously, she's not of Native descent, which is sort of a ridiculous thing to say anyway.
Especially in this day and age where most people who are of Native descent are sort of look like they could be anyone.
Well,
you could be of any ethnicity. Or appear to be of any ethnicity and be of Native descent, because many people in the U.S. just are.
So, guess who's mad at Scott Brown? As you might guess.
Yeah.
Native Americans.
Yeah, are correct. Mad at him.
So basically, like, after...
It's just, like, started this crazy firestorm.
It did. And it's just sort of, like, they're not even talking about anything that's important at this point. They're basically just, like, screaming at each other and, like, you know, Scott Brown is saying that she doesn't look Indian enough. And then it's...
Right.
It's, like...
And then, it's, you know, the Cherokee Association of the United States is...
Like, saying that he demands he apologize.
Right.
And
then somebody else, some other Native American organization was talking about how, you know, there was some other racial assumption because skin color is not a good indication of who's Native American and who's not.
Yeah.
I mean, the head of the Cherokee Nation's name is Bill John Baker. So, obviously,
right,
things have gotten pretty sort of, like, anglicized up in there.
His last name's Baker.
His last name is Baker.
Yeah.
I don't even have a last name that anglicized. So, but I mean, there's... I think it's common knowledge to most people. Perhaps not people in Massachusetts who don't have any Native Americans. Or people in New York State, for that matter, who have... there's a couple of nations that are in New York State, but they're not really huge. They're not, like, giant reservations or anything like that. It may shock a lot of people to learn that many people consider themselves to be of Native American descent who look like they could be anyone.
Yeah.
Black, white, Hispanic.
Exactly.
A lot of people of Native descent walking around.
Yeah. But I think that this is also partly to do with... I think that he is sort of... I think he's grasping at straws a little bit. I think that
she's finally pulled ahead.
I think that it's slipping away.
The momentum is not in his favor.
And it's not even so. I think that he also is starting to realize that, I mean, Romney was never going to win Massachusetts, but I think that, you know, he won that seat in a non-presidential year where he sort of snuck by, able to.
Well, and it was an emergency appointment.
It was. And the thing is that he is running in a state where the people at the top of the ticket, Romney's going to lose there somewhere in the neighborhood of like 15 to 20 points.
Yeah.
And that makes it hard for him. And I think that he is sort of like starting to potentially see the writing on the wall a little bit. I know that race is close. I would venture to guess that she will win, and I don't think it will be that close.
No, I think that there were sort of, because I think he was the incumbent. He had name recognition going in and already had sort of an outfit on the ground that was already in place, that he was ahead for a long time.
Yeah.
I think ultimately Elizabeth Warren is more in line with what people in Massachusetts actually believe.
I think she's going to win by 10 points.
Yeah, I think that, and she's other than this stupid little thing, she's a really great candidate. She's really articulate.
Yeah.
She's well respected, not only by people on the left in Massachusetts, but nationwide. I mean, people are watching this race very closely. And this is Kennedy's seat.
Exactly.
Like, this is not Scott Brown's seat, really.
No.
He got thrown in there because there was some confusion. It was an emergency. No one knew what to do. People were grieving. It was a disaster.
And as Republicans go, he's not awful.
No, he's just sort of like your run-of-the-mill guy.
Right.
He's not, you know, Santorum.
No.
He's not Alan West.
No.
He's not Steve King.
No.
But this is Kennedy's seat. This is a seat that is traditionally a very liberal seat.
Yeah.
And there's really nothing that supports him pulling that off again.
No, I don't think he's going to win. Speaking of Alan West, though.
Speaking of Alan West, he's going to lose.
He also may lose, too. Granted, this is like a Democratic poll here, but apparently he is down by like around
9%. I feel like if this was a Democratic poll that had him losing by 2, we could be suspicious.
That
but
seems like a lot.
Once you're losing by 9 points in a poll,
right?
Like,
right,
shit's not looking great.
And we already have discussed that we know that the Democrats are sort of like probably the ones that could be trusted to do some polling.
Right, because they still have a latent belief in math.
The Republican, yeah, exactly. So
no, but I mean, this. I think that's not surprising because Alan West has been constantly in the news saying not just like insensitive things and ridiculous things, but like stupid things.
Yes,
like he doesn't seem like he's smart.
Yeah,
let alone capable of representing any sort of district.
Yeah,
he doesn't seem like he should be there.
Yeah. Oh, and we don't actually even have this poll, and this is a total aside, but we also threw out Steve King's name, and there was a poll last week, because I get the Christy Vilsack updates.
Of course you do.
That was 46 to 44
King. Yeah.
So that, and that is, like, that's, like, a district that has, like, 100% Republicans.
Yeah, that's, like, so that was, like, a race that I think we were basically considering a total
everybody
loss.
Sort of thought that King was going to win that, even though sort of he was actually in a tight race, but
that's
close. So
yeah, that's
there could be something to the Steve King race too.
That's a good sign.
Who knows?
It's an exciting sign.
Yeah. But back to Alan West.
Right.
Sorry, I got off subject.
Donald Trump holding fundraisers for Ellen West. Why?
Today. This is today, why, I think, actually.
Why?
Yeah.
Is Donald Trump associating with this fool?
Well,
I mean,
or no, vice versa.
I know that. You know, no, like, Ellen West, I can see it. Donald Trump has a name people know. Donald Trump is a rich person with money. Donald Trump is somebody who he can claim supports his campaign. I mean, there's not a lot of other people who have national recognition supporting Ellen West for re-election.
Right.
But why is Donald Trump stepping into the fray there?
I don't know.
I want to point out that for years I said that Donald Trump was an awful human being. Before he stepped into politics, back when he was just a guy with his parents' money who kept going bankrupt and then mysteriously building ugly towers all over my neighborhood, people used to always be like, but that guy has gumption and he has what it takes because he always comes back. Yeah. And I always have maintained that he's awful. He's an awful human being.
Well, clearly.
And
you were right.
With awful
hair.
Is that what you want? Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm correct. That's what I want everyone to know. I want everyone to know that I was first. That's what's most important here.
Sure.
But this is sort of like a new low, I feel like.
It doesn't make any sense
like,
for him to do
Romney,
that.
Romney, all right, he was going to be the presidential nominee. Like, I get why you maybe want to sort of throw your name into the hat with him and sort of, you know, I sort of understand.
Stay away from that. Don't associate
Ellen West,
with him.
Like, how desperate are you?
I know. Totally.
You just need your name in the news that bad that you're willing to throw a fundraiser for Ellen West?
Apparently.
Like, you don't. You start a television show. Do something.
Yeah. I know. The Celebrity Apprentice was really sort of genius. I love that. Also, so
I found
the,
it borderline offensive at every turn.
So were the early seasons of The Apprentice.
When?
Not going to lie. Like when Bill Ranzick won.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
That was a good, that was a quality.
That television show has never appealed to me.
That
because it's basically a show about people aspiring to everything that I hate. Run by somebody who I can't
But
stand.
Do you remember that show was like the number one show on TV for a long time?
Oh, I know.
Do you remember that?
I remember that.
That was like on the Thursday night
that
NBC
was back,
when people were watching NBC.
That was back when we trusted financial people, though.
Well, that's
that
true.
Was in a different time.
That's true.
That was in a time when the economy hadn't crashed, when bankers could be trusted, when Wall Street was a force for good.
Yeah.
A lot was going on back then.
Totally.
Martha Stewart was in jail, and then she was on she was running The Apprentice for a while, wasn't she?
Oh, she had didn't she had
a
own
season
show or something?
Well, I think she had a season on The Apprentice,
was
and her
she?
Daughter
Maybe.
Was on The Apprentice.
Oh, you're right.
Like a lot.
I do
the,
love
the
her.
The Stewarts
daughter.
Were. Yeah, I know.
Remember that show that was on?
I love
that,
that
show.
Whatever Martha.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was called.
I had a radio show too.
Like Life, not
like
not
Oxygen
like
or one
no,
of those.
No, was it that? It was that.
Oh no, no, that wasn't a network yet. We don't even know. We watched
it
religiously.
Really good, it was so funny.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, God. Todd Akin can't shut the hell up. It's just sort of like he can't think before he speaks. Or he's totally thinking before he speaks.
I think he's totally thinking and that he is somebody who is thinking like the type of person who was born in 1912 and thinks that women are just sort of inherently inferior.
Yeah.
Because he just sort of keeps on with these remarks where you're sort of like, have you met a woman? Are you running for office in a state with women? Are you not? Because maybe you're not.
Yeah. But he had a debate with Claire McCaskill, and basically after the debate, I think it was in an interview with the Kansas City Star, and he said that basically that when Claire McCaskill was running for Senate in 2006, she had some confidence, but in this debate she was very aggressive, and he said in 2006 she was much more ladylike.
More ladylike.
Yes.
It's nicer when you can debate a ladylike person.
Mm-hmm, yeah, right.
So much worse when you get an aggressive woman in there who wants answers to things and stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's terrible.
Oh, God.
It's we should elect more ladylike politicians.
Mm. That's what we need.
That's what we need.
We need none of that.
We don't need any ladylike politicians.
No, I don't. No.
We need women who are not acting ladylike.
I agree.
That's when we get those people,
yeah.
We get effective political action. We get Kristen Gillibrand.
Totally. Oh, boy. So another hotly contested Senate race is Tammy Baldwin versus Tommy Thompson. And they also had a debate. We're really getting into some Senate debates.
It's the Senate debate season.
Yeah. It's like a real
It's happening.
Everybody's having debates. So Tommy Thompson really sort of talked himself
Tommy
into
Thompson,
a circle.
Who I had sort of forgotten. I don't know why. But he was the head of HHS.
Yeah, right, under Bush.
Yeah. I mean, I've sort of, I guess, put that entire administration out of my mind as much as possible because you want to.
Like you should
also, Tommy Thompson has a hilarious name, and I should have remembered everything that he's ever done. I should know his whole resume by heart so that I can talk about him more.
So he should sort of probably know the ins and outs of some of the Affordable Care Act issues. He does.
Because he helped get a lot of them through.
Right.
He's worked for lobbyists responsible for getting a lot of, you know, states to apply for stimulus and get into the insurance exchanges.
But now that he's a Republican candidate for Senate, he's not exactly sure what he's supposed to say. But this is what he did say.
Right now, the Affordable Care Act has 20 taxes increased. We got to do away with the Affordable Care Act, and then we can put in things like making sure that the individuals are going to be able to be covered. Pre-existing illness can be taken care of. Individuals are going to be able to have control over their health care and be able to buy a contract. My opponent wants the government to control it. I want you, the individual, and the state government to be able to determine who is going to be able to be the arbitrators and the referees of health care. Huge difference. Do you want the federal government to make a determination who your doctor and hospital is, or do you want the state and the individual? I'm with the state and the individual. My opponent wants the federal government. Huge, diametrically opposed, and that's what it's all about. But there are things in there like wellness and prevention, Bob, that I drafted when I was secretary that are in the Affordable Care Act that absolutely need to be maintained. Chronic illnesses is something I started when I was secretary of health. That's got to be maintained and be able to continue.
So what you heard Tommy Thompson say in there was that he wanted to repeal entirely the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
And then he sort of went on to say all of the things that he liked about the Affordable Care Act. And then at the end, sort of like talked himself back into saying some of the other things that he wanted to keep from the Affordable Care Act, because he wrote them when he was the head of HHS. So it's a similar answer to what we get with Romney a lot of times, where he says that he wants to like completely repeal it and then replace it with itself.
Right. And just not call it Obamacare.
Right.
Because then.
Right.
Well,
so Tommy Thompson
have to get credit.
Really doesn't like Obamacare, but he likes everything that's in it.
Exactly. The thing that they sort of all have the same sticking point on that they never mentioned and what they want to bring back is the mandate.
Right.
Which is the only thing that makes any of the other stuff possible.
Exactly.
Which is why the mandate's in there.
Yes.
Like, no one's trying to have a mandate that they don't need. It's not a thing everyone loves.
No.
But that's what makes all of the policies that they love so much that they wrote possible.
Yeah.
The only
way that we can pay for all of that crap that Tommy Thompson drafted himself, was the freaking mandate.
Yeah. So, way to go, Tommy Thompson. You also aren't really sure what you're supposed to think about Obamacare / Romneycare / any of it.
Uh-huh.
In sort of not funny but random news this week, Fox News is so incompetent that they managed to air a live suicide, even though it was on a 5-second delay.
Yeah.
They were watching their second car chase of the day.
That was my takeaway from this story, which, as tragic as this story is, that someone committed suicide on television, they were following their second high-speed car chase of the day on Fox News. Granted, nobody else was following this at all.
Any car chase.
And when I first read this, I was like, well, clearly this was like some Fox affiliate or something. But no. It was national Fox News, anchored by Shep Smith. It's just like all day long covering car chases.
It's like the LA local news.
Well, it's just
this is what we see on the LA local news. The LA local news
Except
is always about
low
car
speed
chases.
Chases.
We have a lot of low speed chases.
We have a friend
who is
obsessed with car chases.
Yeah.
Apparently, Lila told me that she knows like all of the names of the maneuvers
that
they do.
It's hard not to, because
if
you watch coverage here, every news anchor knows all the maneuver names that the police use.
Sure.
There's like the pit maneuver and the and they all talk about it like they're experts in the field.
Right.
I'd love to know whether Fox News
just
has.
It seems like the more I thought about it, the more I was sort of like, no, this is absolutely perfect, because the same people who are watching Fox News are the same people who probably love a good episode of Cops.
Exactly.
So, yeah, like, this was
people.
Just sort of like...
This is real-life Cops.
Real
but meanwhile,
cops.
Fox
well,
News...
Cops.
I mean, Cops is a reality show, though,
yes,
where they
of
sort of, like, heighten the drama
yeah, exactly.
of the situation.
Well, I think that's
and they have reenactments.
A lot of times, too. That's true.
Because we know someone who was in a reenactment.
We do.
Yeah, we do. Well, I'm not going to tell you on air, and then ruin it for everyone. But we both know this person. This is a person that we know.
But anyway, they came back from a break after the 5-second delay, and Shep Smith was sort of like in horror, obviously, of what happened, as anyone who was watching probably was as well.
Right. The reason that they put it on the delay was in case this happened.
Right.
In case the guy got out of the car and shot himself in the head, and then he did that, and they were like, nah.
Oops.
They weren't just, I mean, no one was watching.
Well,
it was their second car chase of the day. They were over it by then.
Right, the people in the control room were sleeping.
We're just sort of like,
we'll
just
car
stick
chase.
This on.
Snore.
Meanwhile, in Phoenix, where they have major hunger problems, the mayor has decided to live for a week on food stamps.
Yeah. Wait, no, they don't have hunger problems. They have
what was it called? Insecurity problems.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. That's what they called us in this article. And I was like,
yeah, people are they're food starving. Insecure. A lot of food starving. Insecure people yeah. in Phoenix. Okay. But it's like National Hunger Month or something like that.
Yeah.
And so the mayor of Phoenix decided that he would spend a week, his name is Greg Stanton, that he would spend a week living on a food stamp budget, which gives him about $29 a week for food. And
yeah. Guess what? It was hard.
Yeah. It became, quote, hard to focus. He got really tired.
Uh-huh.
Because he was not eating breakfast or lunch.
Yep.
Because he couldn't afford to.
And he was basically having an apple and a handful of peanuts for breakfast and coffee, and then not eating again until dinner.
Right. And he said, I'm tired, and it's hard to focus. I can't go buy a sandwich, because that would be cheating. Even the dollar menu at Taco Bell is cheating. You can't use SNAP benefits for any restaurants, fast food or otherwise. I'm facing a long, hungry day and an even longer night getting dinner on the table. He's also mysteriously, though, using this to bemoan the fact that he's going to have to make dinner for himself.
I know.
Like,
he's probably ordering it a lot.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Mm-hmm. And also seems to think, he seems a little resentful that he can't go to Taco Bell for lunch.
I know.
Which is like...
Don't be doing that anyway.
Don't be doing that.
You're the mayor of Phoenix. Yeah. Like, don't be eating at Taco Bell.
Don't even know what Taco Bell tastes like. I don't. I've never eaten at a Taco Bell.
Dorito tacos are sort of like...
Brent is always talking about those Doritos.
I've only had them once.
I know, but he's really talked about them more than once.
I really wanted them for a long time and just was feeling guilty about it and finally went. I think I was drunk.
Yeah.
Taco Bell is a great place at like 2:30.
You have to be drunk to go there. I've never even heard anyone talk about it while sober. I don't drink, so that's probably why I've never been there. Yeah.
You're either drunk or stoned.
Yeah. But either way, you shouldn't be going there in any state.
No. So here was the other story we sort of hinted at this week where politics and pop culture sort of collided. And this is just sort of... This is too ridiculous to believe. Yeah.
So there is an aide to the Illinois rep John Shimkus.
Sure.
Who has a name. His name is Christian LaBella.
Uh-huh.
And he had like this weird run-in with Lindsay Lohan at a hotel in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And they ended up in like what seems like a fist fight. Or some
much.
Variation
they
thereof.
Ended up in a hotel room with some of their friends. And apparently, Lohan saw his phone at like 6 o'clock in the morning and got upset that there were pictures of her on it that he had taken, basically, while they were doing whatever.
And then he got mad and wanted his phone back.
So she claims that he threw her on the bed and scratched her, which what? So then she ran out of the hotel and filed assault charges against him.
And then he filed assault charges back against her.
Right. Well, no, the harassment or the assault charges were dropped, and then they both filed harassment complaints against each other. Like what?
How did they end up in the same room?
Well, in Manhattan. Too.
In Manhattan,
because
he works for an Illinois
in
state rep, right? He works in D.C. or Illinois potentially, certainly doesn't work in Manhattan.
No.
And why was he partying with like drunk starlets?
And isn't Lindsay Lohan supposed to be sober?
Correct.
I bet she was.
Another side.
She's up at 6 a.m. morning. 6 a.m. in the morning.
She didn't get up early for a run.
No.
This is the only news that seems to come out about Lindsay Lohan anymore. Is
I know.
Totally baffling crazy pants.
I know. But, you know.
There we are. GOP AIDS.
Uh-huh.
They always, it's like when they wound up at Voyeur. Their run-ins with Hollywood are never a good thing. They should not be allowed to talk to people who work or live in Hollywood.
Well, and also just sort of like, don't be hanging out with Lindsay Lohan.
Also,
if you want something,
how are you hanging out with Lindsay Lohan?
Right.
How did you meet Lindsay Lohan?
Yeah.
I was at a wedding this weekend that was two friends of mine who live in D.C. and a bunch of their D.C. friends were there. And I have never in my life heard the phrase, D.C. is Hollywood for ugly people. More than I heard it this weekend.
They really use that
phrase?
They
actually use that phrase.
I thought that was just like a thing.
I thought that was a thing people here said to explain why they weren't in headier pursuits or whatever.
Right.
But no, that was something that people in D.C. were saying when they found out I worked in Hollywood.
Oh.
Isn't that odd? Yeah.
That's very interesting.
But anyway, it's a mystery how
that's why we
those two
there.
Ended up together.
We're too beautiful.
We're too beautiful. Too beautiful for D.C.
Sorry, DC, you can't have us.
In any case.
Well, next week we will have a debate.
A debate
update for you.
Update.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
It's gonna be
oh, thrilled. And I'll have an update from you or for you. I'm going
Yeah.
I'm going canvassing in Yuma. this
Yuma.
Weekend.
Yuma, I'm gonna Arizona.
Try and, I'm going to try and bring Arizona for the Democrats.
That's right.
It's not going to happen, but I'm going to try.
Brent's going to single-handedly make as much of a difference as one person can.
Yeah. So, I'll tell you all about that.
Right. As long as he doesn't get shot at a stoplight.
It might be terrifying right now.
Then.
Yeah.
I also met somebody who is a professional canvasser.
That's not a thing.
I know. I once actually interviewed for a job that was supposedly as a professional canvasser. And I didn't take the job. I was like, I'm going to have to talk to strangers to do this job. I just don't do that. But anyway, we'll see you next week.
Yeah, have a good
new
week.
New stories and excitement.
Yes.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.